Blog Talk Radio.
James Vosick here, Conservative's Perspective, telling you, daggone right, it's better in the USA, baby. I hope you guys had a great Labor Day weekend. I did, kind of bittersweet in its way, kind of a tough anniversary, but we got through it, and we are here today, and we are not alone today by any stretch of the imagination. Our friend of the program and good friend of mine, Mr. Michael Cutler, is going to join us this evening. And we're going to talk about a couple of things. And one of the reasons, and I've told you guys this a million times again, I'm reluctant to think of anyone better informed when it comes to the issue, the very serious, very existential issue of illegal immigration and what's going on in the country. And it's going to be a shock. We've talked about it here a lot of times because this is Michael's, like I said, this is his level of expertise. But what's going on now, and this is the only way to say it, America, the American federal government fundamentally is a very deep-pocketed, silent partner to the biggest, most insidious, most disgusting human trafficking operation the world has ever seen. And we're going to talk about those things because that's what Mike is here to talk about. But another thing we're going to talk about, and I'm going to go ahead. I'm not going to give him a Dean Martin roast this evening. I'm really happy to have him, so I'm not going to tease him too much. I'm going to bring him on right now, our friend, Mr. Michael Cutler. Michael, welcome to the program. It's great to get to talk with you. Well, it's great to get to talk with you no matter when, but it's great to get to talk with you now.
Absolutely. Thank you, James. Thank you so much for having me. And by the way, it's not just illegal immigration. The legal immigration system has been subverted to undermine national security, public safety, and the jobs and wages of Americans. That's the issue. You know, one of the things I don't understand, James, is how politicians, if they really are serious, but they're not, they're all bought and paid for with a couple of exceptions, I believe. But the immigration laws of the United States have nothing to do with race, religion, or ethnicity. If they did, I couldn't have enforced those laws for 30 seconds, let alone 30 years. The idea of the border wall blows me away that anyone could be opposed to it, because the wall is not designed to keep people out of the country. The border wall was designed to block off the spaces between ports of entry to make certain that anybody or anything that enters the country is screened. Very simple, right? So when people said, oh, it's a wall of hate, that's nonsense. You're being played for fools by these corrupt politicians to give the redundancy. And the basic underlying principle, the premise for our immigration laws is very simple. Protect public health, public safety, national security, and the jobs and wages of Americans. And the open borders crowd on both sides of the aisle have done a phenomenal job of convincing everybody that if you dare suggest that we be careful not to let in people who want to hurt us, if you're a bigot, racist, xenophobe, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We close our doors at night to make certain that we don't get killed while we're sleeping. We're supposed to secure our borders to keep out people who would hurt us. In fact, if you go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, and if you read my articles at Front Page, I always include links to this stuff, but Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182 lays out who is supposed to be prevented from entering the country. And if there's a category that you disagree with, let me know. It starts out with aliens with dangerous communicable diseases or severe mental illness. Let's remember that Ellis Island was a quarantine station, and think about what we've been going through with COVID and maybe going through with it again, okay?
Yeah.
Keep out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases or are mentally ill and violent. Aliens who are criminals, terrorists, spies, human rights violators, war criminals, human traffickers, drug smugglers, aliens who are likely to become a public charge or if they work would displace Americans and drive down their wages. Is there any category that any rational person could look at and say, nope, that's a terrible thing to do? It's simply about protecting America and Americans. And Americans have been sold a lie. It started with Jimmy Carter, but he said we're going to not use the word alien anymore. We're going to call them all immigrants. The term alien, by the way, is a legal term, and all it means is any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. It doesn't mean you're ugly, you smell bad, you're immoral, or stupid. It simply means you are not a citizen and you're standing on our soil. And when we go to other countries, unless we're dual nationals, we become aliens and there's no offense to be taken. But the problem is it's about clarity. And these politicians are con artists. Joe Biden perhaps has risen to the highest level of con artistry over most other politicians. I mean, if we're to believe everything we're hearing, and it keeps seeming to be getting worse, okay? But the American people have been sold on this nonsense. The immigrants who will do the work Americans won't do. Yes, because Americans are stupid, lazy, and whatever. No. There isn't a job an American won't do for a living wage under reasonable conditions. This is about exploitation.
Exactly.
And when we started to undermine American workers, we started to push America to the left. It's very simple. And I have a lot of friends on the right. They say, oh, $15 an hour for someone to flip hamburgers. Okay, how much do you want to pay them? An order of French fries? You know, I've made this point, and I'm going to make it again because we just was Labor Day. When you go to work, you're really being paid for two things. Two things. Item number one, you're being paid for your skills. So a surgeon should make more than somebody who flips hamburgers, okay? An engineer should make more money than the guy that works in the car wash washing cars. All honorable work, honest work is honorable work, But you wouldn't expect a mechanical engineer who designs bombers and railroad trains to get the same kind of a paycheck that the guy that scrubs cars gets, right? But then there's another factor to why we are being paid when we go to work. Because when you go to work, you're giving up the most valuable and irreplaceable commodity that you can provide. Time out of your life. And that's equal. Whether you're a neurosurgeon, whether you're a nuclear physicist, or whether you wash dishes in the back of a restaurant, your time is equally valuable because all people should be looked upon as being equally valuable. So if you're washing dishes or doing surgery or flying that airliner, you're not home. You're not home with your kids. You're not home playing with your dog. You're not painting that beautiful painting that you've been working on or going fishing or doing the other things that give you personal emotional satisfaction. You're doing what the person who pays you wants you to do. So you're giving up a chunk of time from your life that you can never get back for all the money in the world. So when someone says, $15 an hour is to flip burgers, yes, because not only are they flipping burgers, but they're giving up a chunk of time out of their lives they can never get back under any circumstances. And if you don't pay people a living wage, they won't come to work. That's what the free economy that we hear so much about from the conservative side talks about. Free market, free market. Well, what does the free market mean? I offer you a job. You tell me what you're willing to work for. And if you're not happy with the wage, I have to increase the wage. It's supply and demand. It's classic economics, and it's fair. But when you throw into the mix aliens who can be exploited, now you're creating unfair competition for American workers, and you're destroying their jobs and their wages, and that's illegal under our laws. But yet, what do we hear from the politicians? We need to modernize the immigration laws. What's wrong with our immigration laws? Well, the laws protect American workers from foreign workers. How dare they? What they really are saying is we want employers to have an absolute fundamental right to walk into that factory, fire every last American, send them packing, and replace them with foreign workers who will work for one-third the wage. Free market? Whatever happened to live and let live? Whatever happened to the notion that America was built on a rising middle class? That's how you kill the middle class. Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer back on April 30th, 2009, and said the solution to wage inequality is to make high-tech American workers. These are people with advanced degrees, MBAs, PhDs. Make those bums compete with foreign workers, because then we could get rid of that wage premium. And once we slash their wages, you will greatly reduce inequality in wages between Americans with skills and those with lesser skills. So let's make sure that that neurosurgeon does not make much more than the guy that washes cars. Is that what America is built on? No, that's called communism. And what it does is push Americans to the left. In fact, I wrote an article on the front page a while back where I said that for the Democrats to succeed, Americans must fail. But who's been pushing the failure of Americans but the conservatives who want to use immigration to satisfy corporate America and business owners? Everybody is in on the gag, and who's getting killed by this? The American workers, and as a consequence, America itself is suffering greatly, and we're being pushed into communism. So it's remarkable to me. People need to wake up. If you honor people who work for a living, then pay them a fair wage, fair wage. And you know, I've had the opportunity in my travels, James, to meet actors, actresses, politicians, astronauts. It's been an amazing journey. And I had dinner with an actor. I'm not going to tell you who it was. I'm not going to mention it to the audience. It was a private conversation. But he told me that he detested his fellow actors. And he said, Mike, you're not going to believe what goes on in Washington. He said, I get millions of dollars to play a role. I'm happy to take the money. I live a great life. I've done a gazillion movies. But he said there were some actors that the producers will approach them and say, hey, Charlie, we'd like you to play a general in this movie. And Charlie says, great. And Charlie says, how much are you going to pay me? $15 million. Oh, no. I don't work for that. $25 million. And maybe they go back and forth. And by the time it's done, $15 million grows to $22 million. To make believe he's a general who in real life is barely middle class. Think about that. Well, where's the money going to come from? Hollywood does not have a money tree. So the producers are then forced to go to the army of supporting people. And you see them when the credits roll, the carpenters and the grips and the electricians, that whole army. Well, those folks don't get millions. They get a regular wage, you know, whatever, $60 an hour, $50 an hour. And the producer goes to these people and tells that carpenter, he says, look, you're a great carpenter. You do wonderful work. We've hired you so many times. We're always happy with what you do. But you know what, Bob? We can't pay you scale. Scale is $60, and we've got an actor who needs to be paid more than we budgeted for. Would you work for us for $40 an hour? Now, Bob has three kids. They all want to go to college. He's making $40 an hour as a carpenter because some actor wasn't satisfied with $15 million. So to give him or her $22 million, they have to take it out of the backside of these hard-working people who work in the movie industry. And these are the so-called liberals that will talk about what's right and social justice as they buy themselves a Learjet or a new Lamborghini or God knows what. I'm sick of it. I'll be honest with you. We've lost all proportion and all value. I was talking to my family yesterday, my wife and my youngest son. I said, you know, I've met some astronauts, which is an amazing honor. But astronauts basically were at the same pay grade that I was. And they fly in space and take all those risks and so forth, and that's the way it works. It's a GS scale if they're civilians. But yet, if an actor plays at being an astronaut, that actor might walk away with $30 million. Just stop and let it sink in. I'm a capitalist. I believe that everyone should bargain out the prices that they want, and that's great. But at some point, there's a lack of proportion. We used to pay CEOs of companies 50 times what their average worker earned. Now they're making 60 times, 60, and it's still not enough. And how do they get the extra money? Well, they outsource the jobs. They import foreign workers. The bottom line is they screw over Americans because there's always room for more oarsmen on a slave ship. What do you think of that statement, James? Am I wrong?
Oh, no. No, they have a file cabinet full of resumes for that. You better bet.
And so you look at that and you say, well, what are we doing? Chuck Yeager, if you watch The Right Stuff, was working for a couple thousand dollars a year when he flew the X-1, right? I wonder what the actor who portrayed him in The Right Stuff got paid. A couple dollars more than that, I would imagine. You see, now, I don't have a problem with it, but let's get fair. Let's understand that as you destroy the middle class, you're destroying the dreams of our children and their children, and you're destroying America. America used to be a fair country where you expected that if you went to school and busted your tail and benefited from some luck, you could write the next American success story. The Democrats used to be the ones who supported labor, and the Republicans supported business owners. And I was a Democrat. My dad was a construction worker, one of my biggest heroes. Blue collar rocks. Without blue collar, there's no society. Yeah, I'm a labor guy. Make no bones about it. I'm a lifelong Democrat. So now that the country is being invaded, and there's no other way to describe what Biden has done to us. Now that we're being invaded, and there are now 7, 8, 9 million, God knows how many aliens in the country being dispersed across the country, thereby undermining public health, public safety, national security, as we come up on the 22nd anniversary of 9/11. Okay.
By the way, Just for clarity, when you mentioned Chuck Yeager, I went back and looked it up. October 1947, as a
yes.
captain in the United States Air Force, he was pulling in $241.50 a month.
Yep.
Now, I'm sure he got flight pay, but that was what he was making
when he
got inside Glamorous Glennis that day.
Right.
Yeah.
And by the way, when I had prostate cancer, to cheer me up, my wife got me a model of the X-1 autographed by Chuck Yeager. How cool is that?
Pretty cool, and I've seen that in your videos up on your shelf.
Yes.
Man, I like that.
Yep, yep. And then I went out and bought a model of the P-51 Mustang. He also autographed because he became an ace in the P-51, and I think it's one of the most beautiful airplanes ever designed.
Oh,
So the thing of it is, though, reasonable expectations, reasonable wages. We look out for each other as Americans. And what has happened is the lunatic left is trying to pit American against American. It's a divide and conquer strategy. If you're white, you have white privilege. If you're black, it's hopeless because you're never going to get your fair share. We've seen this before. That's how the Holocaust started. And let me tell you, my family was decimated in the Holocaust. I'm Jewish. My mother's mother was killed in Poland because she couldn't get out of Poland, and being a Jew, that was that. So I was named for her. And it was all about your life would be terrific if there were no damn Jews and no damn gypsies and no damn what. And they had a little list, the hate list. We're headed in that direction right now, and it keeps me awake at night. This is crazy stuff. And, you know, every group of people have come into this country. They've built the country. They had to overcome stupidity because bigotry is stupidity, and it's not limited to black, white, green, purple, or polka dots.
No.
And everyone has suffered mightily because of stupid, and sometimes they say you can't fix stupid. But the point of the matter is people are able to overcome it. And what we should be teaching in the schools is how every group of Americans fought in the Second World War, contributed to liberty, contributed to the construction of America. I had the privilege when I was at Brooklyn College of working in the Audiovisual Center, and my boss was a gentleman by the name of George Bing. George Bing was a black man, very kind, very soft-spoken, brilliant photographer, and I worked for him. And I told him that I was interested in aviation. And he said to me, did you ever hear about the Tuskegee Airmen? And I said, no. He said, well, let me get you a book. I want you to read it, Mike, and then we'll talk about it. I said, okay. So the next day I came to work. I was working part-time. My dad had already died. My mother was dying of cancer, so I was working, going to school, and caring for my mom. I was out for a juggling act, and I was 19 at the time. And George came back with this really nice book, and he lent it to me. It was about the Tuskegee Airmen. I said, I didn't even know anything about them. I was embarrassed. I said, how did you find out about them? And he got a little bit quiet, and he didn't even make eye contact because he was that kind of a guy. And he said, Mike, I was one of them. I was one of them. I said, you're kidding. He said, no. And he said, we never lost a U.S. bomber when we protected them. He said, I'd like to believe that what my buddies and I did maybe got to some of those Nazi bastards who killed your family and all those other people. And, you know, we both cried together and we hugged each other. Why wasn't I taught about the Tuskegee Airmen back then? Why weren't we taught about the Ritchie Boys? 60 Minutes did a great story about the Ritchie Boys. It turns out that my surgeon's dad, as far as I understand, was a Ritchie Boy. For those of you not familiar with the Ritchie Boys, these were kids that came out of Nazi Germany as refugees, came here, and were recruited by the OSS, Office of Strategic Services, to go back into Germany because of their familiarity with the country, with the language, with the culture, and become spies for America. And these were Jewish kids whose families came here escaping the horrors of the Holocaust, and they immediately signed up to go back. And a lot of them didn't make it, but they were credited with so many successes that contributed to America's ultimate success during the Second World War. Why weren't we taught about the Native Americans who didn't have a written language, and so we were able to use their non-written language so that code breakers couldn't intercept messages and understand what was being said? Every group of Americans contributed to World War II. Every group suffered massive casualties. Wouldn't that be a great starting point for teaching history? What E pluribus unum out of many one really means? Tell me I'm crazy, James. Go ahead.
Not about to. And let's not forget the 442nd Combat Infantry Regiment with the Nisei, the Japanese Nisei that fought against the Germans in Europe. And
yep.
You're absolutely right. It doesn't matter where these guys came from when they came to America. When America called, every single one of them answered, and they didn't do it with some kind of qualification. They didn't do it kind of conditions. This was their country, and they elected to serve.
And in fact, I remember my surgeon who took care of my leg. I got injured making arrests. And he said to me that his parents came here during the war. His father was in his 20s. And as soon as they got here, his father told his his parents, the doctor's grandparents, of going back to Germany. They said, are you crazy? He said, who better than me to kill the bastards? And he went back, and they didn't hear from him for months, and they thought he was dead. They couldn't sleep at night. And finally, one day, they get a heavily redacted postcard from their son. And what does the postcard say? Best day of my entire young life. I killed my first Nazi bastard this morning. What a way to start my day. Okay? So that's what we should be teaching and celebrating and encouraging instead of this, oh, this guy has more than you and that guy has less than you. And this is insanity and we're buying into it. And it's hurting our children. The idea that we're going to drive a wedge between kids and their parents over what sex they are, over what, are you crazy? And there are some people that are cowardly enough to say, well, I don't want to make waves. You don't want to make waves. They may be giving your son hormones so that he will never be able to be a father. You're okay with that? They might be hurting your daughter so that she will never be able to bear children. Is that good? Well, I don't want people to think that of me. You know how many people came
permanent.
To me when I stood up? Yes. Yes. And people came to me and said, well, aren't you upset? I mean, aren't you afraid you're going to go before Congress and disagree? I said, America was attacked. My neighbors died. The ashes landed on my damn house. What am I afraid of? When I talked to my mom about the Holocaust, she came here as a 13-year-old. She used to cry in her sleep till her dying day. And I would say, why are you crying in your sleep? And she says, because I keep having nightmares about saying goodbye to my mother at the train station for the last time, and I was 13 years old. I made my mother a promise, and the promise was that if things ever went sideways, I would step forward. All I'm doing is keeping a promise to my mother. My first wife, who died of cancer tragically in her 30s, her parents were in the concentration camps. Her mother was in the concentration camps. This isn't a game. History has a tendency to repeat itself if we don't learn the lessons. And we're watching America being dismantled, and then I watched the idiotic debate at Fox News, and it was disgusting. Brett Baer and Martha McCallum should know better. And the candidates should know better. Now, if I was a candidate on the stage and they said, Mike, why do you want to be president? I would say it's very simple. The Biden administration is violating the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, flooding millions of people into the country. This is not sustainable. It's doing irreparable damage to the environment, the economy, infrastructure, but most importantly, national security. The 9/11 Commission warned clearly about the threats posed by people coming to America to attack us. And if Biden has another term in office, we could easily wind up with more than 100 million aliens whose identities cannot be verified. And just think about it, 19 terrorists killed more people on 9/11 than we lost to the Japanese fleet at Pearl Harbor. And it's not just aliens coming across the southern border. And that's why we need to get rid of this administration, because they appear hell-bent to destroy America for once and for all. That would have been my response. And when one of the politicians on the stage or two of them made some reference, and only to the southern border, God forbid we talk about the northern border, 95,000 miles of coastline, the fact that last year nearly 900,000 aliens who were lawfully admitted through ports of entry disappeared into the night, never to be seen again, 900,000 legally admitted, okay? McCallum and Brett Baer blew the politician off and said, we'll get to immigration, but that's coming up later. Yes, 90 minutes later in a two-hour debate, and it was one question, and Chris Christie had a problem saying, yes, I throw them out. By what mechanism? We don't have ICE agents. We don't have anything in place to deal with it. We are being flooded, and after a flood, you have to clean up the mess. The Border Patrol, absolutely less than no role in cleaning up the mess. Oh, we need to hire 87,000 Border Patrol agents instead of IRS agents. No, we don't. What do you think of that? No, we don't. We need 87,000 ICE agents to do interior enforcement. But we don't have interior enforcement because George W. Bush is morally bankrupt. When he created the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I came to call it, he violated the Homeland Security Act. And you know what? It was the Republicans who called him out. It was the Republicans who had cojones, who had chutzpah, It was people like James Sensenbrenner and John Hostetler and Lamar Smith. And that was how I got to do the hearings. It was a strange place to be, but the Republican leadership in the Congress actually leaned on me and said to me, Mike, you're not going to believe what he said today. And we need you to come to Washington to set the record straight. So very often when I went to Washington to testify at a congressional hearing, it was to provide a counterpoint to the President of the United States, and I was invited by whom? The Republicans, and Bush was the Republican president in the White House. That's leadership. Now it's like organized crime. If Joe Biden went out there with a machine gun and mowed down a bunch of people, somehow the Democrat Party would justify it because he's part of our party. It's like John Gotti and all of their little underlings. You don't speak ill of John Gotti and live, right? This is where we are today. And remember, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. So they're doing irreparable damage. And it's, again, not just the southern border. So let me quickly read you a couple of headlines because these are jarring. August 3rd, 2023, just about a month ago. This is Justice Department now. Two U.S. Navy service members arrested for transmitting military information to the People's Republic of China. Is that an immigration story, James? What do you think?
I can see where it would be when we're dealing with Chinese nationals.
Well, going a bit further, it turns out one of the spies had just become a naturalized U.S. citizen. So I'll ask you again, is this an immigration story?
Well,
How did China become a military force to be reckoned with? You want a simple answer? Immigration. Because we brought their students to our best schools and taught them to be engineers, computer programmers, chemists, metallurgists, etc. Okay? All because Kissinger wanted to sell soda and trucks to China. So we took a third world country that posed no threat to America, even though they're communists, and we turned them into a military powerhouse. Think back to what Eisenhower warned when he left office, beware the military-industrial complex. So this is an immigration story from square one to square 20. We let in the Chinese students. We educated them. They repaid us by becoming the most efficient spies in history. Okay? It's an immigration story. But wait, we'll get to immigration 90 minutes from now. 90 minutes, give us time.
Right.
What's your rush? We have bigger fish to fry. Really? Okay, here's another press release. August 25th, 2023. Justice Department again. Pakistani doctor sentenced to 18 years in prison for attempting to provide material support to ISIS. Is that an immigration story?
I would think
because
so.
This dirtbag entered the United States on an H-1B visa, working in a U.S. hospital. How does that make you feel? Was it portrayed as an immigration story? No. Okay. So when we talk about immigration, it's not just illegal immigration, and it impacts everything. Then I was just on Newsmax TV this past week. They're good enough to have me on from time to time. Here's an interesting headline. CNN. Now, they're certainly not conservatives. Exclusive. Smuggler with ties to ISIS helped migrants enter the U.S. from Mexico, raising alarm bells across the government. And what does the White House say? Oh, we've got this under control. We got this. Really? No, they don't. The FBI is running around like headless chickens trying to find out where they are now. And this is only one of many. When Afghanistan got blown up by Mr. Biden, we admitted tens of thousands of Afghani refugees without vetting them or improperly vetting them. And then it turned out, and I wrote an article about it, that one of the translators who was helping with the vetting process, you guessed it, was working for ISIS. What could possibly go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? So the Biden administration has created this mind-boggling haystack that grows with every single day. And Fox News understood the risk because they covered the topic 90 minutes after they started. If this was the Titanic, they'd be worried about whether or not the waiters had their bow ties properly fastened. This is done purposefully because they're all in on the gag until something blows up. I hope it doesn't happen. I want to be wrong. But, you know, I had a major fight with the chief counsel to the House Judiciary Committee before 9/11, and we were very, very honest and blunt with each other, and I was really angry, and I remember driving my son. My youngest son has a form of autism. He had problems with sleep. He was 4 years old, sleeping in the back of my car. My wife said, oh, let him, you know, just drive around so he sleeps, because he was up all night and he's going to be hell on wheels. I said, okay. And this counsel called me back 5:30 as I was passing Kennedy Airport. Beautiful, sunny afternoon in New York. And we got into a big fight about resources to go after immigration fraud. Okay, resources to go after immigration fraud. And I said, we're letting people in. We're giving them lawful status. It makes them easy for them to hide in plain sight. I had already testified before my first hearing back in 1997 about immigration fraud and visa fraud because of the 93 attacks. So everybody knew this was a big deal. And I said, we have no resources. He said, oh, you don't understand, Mike. You don't understand political reality. I said, political reality is a bigger oxymoron than George Carlin's infamous jumbo shrimp, okay? And
yeah.
I got so angry, I finally said to him in frustration, what the F is it going to take, another attack at the Trade Center? Oh, did I tell you this was the Friday before 9/11?
Wow.
Think about that. Let it sink in.
That's powerful stuff. Yeah, that's powerful stuff.
Okay. And the ashes landed on my neighborhood like a snowfall, and the ashes in part contained the remains of my neighbors and the people on the airplanes, et cetera, et cetera. And we still can't get it. And now we're coming up on the 22nd anniversary. And we have no idea who's here. The FBI is running around like headless chickens. And in part, the problem is because they're devoting so much of their resources to going after the real terrorists. You know, moms and dads that show up at school board meetings. The real terrorists, the real threat. We're overwhelmed. We're overwhelmed. You may as well give someone a thimble and tell them to go to the beach and get rid of all the sand as the water brings in more sand. And yet, Fox News said, we'll get to it. Hold your horses. What's the rush? We'll get to it. Immigration? Don't worry about it. We'll get to it. One question. And it focused only on the southern border. So did the Pakistani doctor who was sentenced to 18 years in prison for attempting to provide material support to ISIS cross the Mexican border? No. How many of the 9/11 hijackers crossed the Mexican border? None. So then why are we only focusing on the Mexican border? Because this is the game that has been played on Americans forever. Because what they have done, because they know that Americans are selfish, Americans can only conjugate verbs in the first person singular. They're grammatically challenged. If it doesn't concern me, who gives a rat's tail, right? I had a reporter call me up about 2 years or a year after 9/11. I guess he didn't recognize my area code from my cell phone as a New York number. And he said to me, they blew up the towers in New York, but he said, it happened. But now we've got a Somali terrorist who wants to blow up the mall in Ohio where my wife goes shopping with my kids. Can you imagine that? I'll spare you the language. But in no uncertain terms, I recommended that this piece of garbage attempt an anatomical impossibility, if you get my drift.
Yeah.
And I said to him, you selfish piece of trash. I said, on 9/11, my neighbors died. Those ashes landed on my house. He said, well, I didn't know you were from New York. I said, so if I wasn't from New York, I shouldn't care either? I was so enraged, I went to John Hostetler, because I was working that closely with the subcommittee back then, and I said to him, John, I need you to get a map of the United States prepared by your staff, and I want you to put a mark on every city, every location, where the victims from 9/11 came from. And they did. My understanding is they posted it, I think, in the Rotunda for like 6 or 8 months. It was a big, big map. And it was part of the exhibit for the hearing. And I made the statement at the hearing that no American city is safe if any American city is attacked. So the politicians, who are a greedy bunch of slime buckets, know that most Americans aren't much better than they are. I mean, many Americans are truly getting representative government, or they wouldn't be standing for this crap. What do you think of that? I'm angry at our fellow Americans as much as I am the crooks in Washington. And so you look at this mess, and no one is standing up to these people and saying, what are you doing? Why are you doing this to us? And so they convince the American people that the aliens are coming across the southern border, so there's only four border states. And most Americans look at that and they say, oh, I live in Nebraska. Who gives a crap about the Mexican border? I live in Pennsylvania. Why would I care about the Mexican border? I live in New York. The Mexican border? Well, you know what's really funny? New York has the greatest number of illegal aliens, or at least we used to, because they'd only come across the Mexican border. We have a huge population of illegal aliens in New York who came through Kennedy International Airport and never left. So they call them visa overstays, which is nonsense. Because I'm going to be honest, and this is as a former agent, do I really care if some guy comes here from some other country and sleeps on his brother's couch for 5 years? No, that's not doing any damage. What does the damage if this character goes out there and takes a job that should rightfully go to an American or a lawful immigrant? What does damage if this guy goes out there and robs banks or rapes little girls? See? So I call them visa violators, not visa overstays. They always use the language to minimize it, right?
Right.
It's always this game of semantics. You know, New York man, the New York man turns out to be an alien who's a terrorist, but New York man. Why is he New York man? Because he was living in New York when they arrested him, so he's New York man. So now we have a guy who's wanted for murder, or actually he was convicted of murder in Pennsylvania, right? And the story is that he actually came to America from Brazil because he was convicted of murder in Brazil and fled to the United States to avoid the long arm of the law in Brazil, and then kills his girlfriend in front of their kids. But for the most part, no one's reporting it that way. I was listening to CBS today. And it was a long report how this guy's mother is urging him to turn himself in, and it's a terrible thing. Not a word about the fact this guy's from Brazil. Not a word about the fact that he committed an additional murder. Now, if he killed two people in New York or Pennsylvania, I am sure they would say, wanted for a double homicide. Wanted for the murder of a woman in Pennsylvania. So the woman he killed in Brazil is of no consequence? No, they don't want anyone to understand that this is yet another piece of garbage who ran our borders or otherwise entered the United States illegally because he's a fugitive from justice and he poses a threat to national safety, or public safety, or national security. So CBS does this 5-minute report focusing on how he killed this woman in Pennsylvania but blithely ignored that he committed a prior murder in Brazil. And then you have a genius in law enforcement that they interview saying, well, we think he's headed south. He's going to head to Mexico and go back to Brazil. Well, what's interesting about that is we do see a lot of that. People wanted for crimes in America. They have an escape hatch and they use it. But this guy's wanted for murder in Brazil. Do you think he's going to go back to Brazil? He ran from Brazil to avoid jail. So he's not going back to Brazil. He might go to Mexico. He might go to El Salvador. He might go to Argentina. Nobody's thinking straight. Nobody's making any sense. And again, if God forbid you say, boy, we need to be careful because innocent people are dying, well, then you're a racist, a bigot, a xenophobe, and the list goes on. So imagine if the Biden administration doesn't stop. Imagine if we have 100 million aliens in the country by the end of his second term, God forbid. We're done. We're done. And, you know, for all this yakking about the environment and everything, healthcare, schools, every person in the country, whether they're here permanently, whether they're tourists, I don't care who they are, have an impact on the environment, the economy, infrastructure, and so forth, right? I think I may have mentioned it on your program previously, that it's estimated that each human being requires about 100 gallons of water per day. Every single day.
Right, Yeah.
For sanitary reasons, right? Showering and flushing the toilet and cooking and drinking and you name it, 100 gallons. But that doesn't include the water needed to irrigate the fields to grow the crops that they need also. Just 100 gallons of water. So let's say there's 7 million aliens in the country right now who should not be here, but Joe Biden let them in. You know what that means? Every day, 700 million gallons of clean water is being consumed by people who shouldn't be here. They require electricity. We're concerned about the power grid. They require food. And they want us to eat insects. Insects, while they dine on filet mignon because they're privileged. They even want us now to get different ceiling fans. I mean, just let that one sink in. Ceiling fans. People use ceiling fans as a cheaper and more energy-efficient alternative to air conditioning. But it's not good enough because that fan could be 10% more efficient. So while we're being told to get different ceiling fans, NASA is working on a supersonic airliner that might travel at 4 or 5 times the speed of sound. I find that remarkable. Now, I'm an aviation guy, and you are also, and I'm all about progress in aviation technology. I was going to be an aerospace engineer. But I want everyone to let this one sink in. Kamala Harris, by her own admission, said the average American family can't get their hands on more than $400 if they're confronted with an emergency tomorrow. $400. Can't get their hands on more than $400 in an emergency. This isn't the America I grew up in, by the way. So they're going to build these airliners that can zip from the West Coast to Japan in 5 hours and from New York to London in 2 hours. And how many Americans who can't find $400 are going to line up for a $25,000 airplane ticket? And what damage would an airplane traveling at that altitude and at that speed do to the environment, to the atmosphere? Why is no one challenging this? What am I getting wrong here, James? I keep looking at this and saying, I must be nuts. Maybe I'm missing something. Am I missing anything? What do you think?
No, I don't think you are. I think that, and this is just going to be a blanket statement, but I say it in this application because I know you understand what I mean. It's all part of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's all part of the plan. And while we've – I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and meanwhile, these masters of the universe, Gates and all the others, how people could fall for Gates. I had some people that are anti-Trump, and it's a derangement syndrome. I'm not a big Trump fan. He's not my kind of guy. I wouldn't want him for a friend, but I certainly would vote for him if he was the choice because there is no choice. Do you want a life preserver made of cork or a life preserver made of lead? That's your choice when you go vote in the next election, right? You might not like the color. It might be uncomfortable. But do you want cork or do you want lead for your life preserver? I just thought of it now as I'm talking to you. There is no choice, okay?
No.
But my goodness, everyone said to me, well, the doctors that Trump believes in, they don't have the experience. They said, and Bill Gates, who has no degree and never studied medicine or biology, is going out there vaccinating Africa, and he's the guy to listen to. And when they asked Gates about his airplanes and said to him, you know, maybe you should cut down, he said, oh, no, I do important work. I can't cut down. How could I do what I do if I have to fly along with peasants? He didn't say that, but you get the point. So they're unapologetic. Mayor Bloomberg did the same damn thing. They asked his people when he was the mayor. He's telling everyone to turn down the thermostat in the winter and wear 3 sweaters and cover themselves with 4 blankets. They said he has the carbon footprint of like 20 people. He has his own airliner. He's got, I don't know, 20 mansions scattered around the world. And the answer was simple. They didn't say, you're right, he should do differently. Oh, no, he does important work. He has every right to do whatever it is he needs to do to be successful because that makes us all better. Is that how Mahatma Gandhi was a leader? No, it's lie after lie. They create nightmares. And part of it goes back to Nancy Pelosi and her infamous freezer. They need to be able to feel superior because deep inside they know they're losers, and they are losers. If you look at their childhoods, most of them were very unhappy people, very unsuccessful socially. I'm trying to remember Nadler when he was chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. And I watched him sitting there pontificating, and I said, my God, I know who Nadler is. This was the kid that when his friend said we're going to play hide and seek, he would hide, but nobody would look for him. Okay? And I bet Pelosi was no better, the Wicked Witch of the West. Right? So now they're in power, and when you're in power, you got to use the power. I became the PA president of my daughter's public school. God only knows if the FBI only found out, they'd put a surveillance team on my house. Maybe they already have already. Well, we had a woman who was the PA president, and she was the Wicked Witch of the West. They dumped her. She was the kind of woman that it was raining out, pouring, and my son was like, you know, in kindergarten. She would slam the door in your face because at 8:45 we closed the doors. Well, it's 8:45. Well, then we closed the door. And she would look you in the eye and slam the door in your face just as your hand was almost on the handle to the door. And she did it to everybody. And they asked her, why do you do it? She said, because I'm in charge. She was also going through, as I understood it, a miserable divorce. I hope her husband was successful in court because I don't know. I had such hostile feelings. And she did it time and again. And she did it in every way she could, in charge. And you're going to pay for that. How many politicians conduct themselves that way? And so now you've got Eric Adams, who is a New York City police captain, and you have Hochul, I call her Hokum, as the governor, demanding that we give employment authorization to millions of illegal aliens because that way they'll be self-sufficient. And what will that do? Cost more Americans and more lawful immigrants their jobs, drive down wages, but guess who's standing shoulder to shoulder with them on this one? You're going to love it, folks. The labor unions. If I belonged to a labor union that did that, I would leave the union. I would leave the union. Because they're doing this because they know that if these people get to work, they can sign them up as members so they get their dues, and everyone they sign up gives them political leverage. Is that in the best interest of their longstanding members that joined so that they would have some voice in the bargaining situation with the management? No. This isn't consistent with that. This goes in the opposite direction. The union has become the ally of the employers. So once again, who's getting screwed? The average American, which is why I keep saying the same thing. We have to stop this BS about America first. No, you didn't mishear me. I oppose the notion of America first. We need to replace it with the notion of Americans first. We the people first. America first are these American corporations that get all kinds of money from the government and then build factories in Mexico, China, and elsewhere. Insurance companies, banks, automotive companies, and then they put the American flag on their product. BS. Americans first. How's that for an interesting way of changing things a bit?
Well, you know, for years they said if it was good for General Motors, it was good for America, and to a certain extent, that was true. But things have taken a turn from that, and you're right. They've taken a turn from that 15, 20, 25 years ago. And they outsource all this stuff to foreign countries. And you're right. They get these components that come from places that use slave labor, and they slap them together and put them in a box. And like you said, they throw an American sticker on the thing because maybe parts of it were assembled here in the United States. But that doesn't mean really, truly made in America.
No, and it gives our adversaries the opportunity to commit industrial espionage all at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lose-lose-lose. But they're making ever more money, 600 times what the average schnook on the production floor makes, and American middle class is going down the hopper. Now, what's interesting, I was watching Fox the other day, and they said, you know, with all the jobs that are being created, we don't understand why unemployment has ticked up a bit. I know why. You got millions of people here who are probably getting jobs, and they're displacing Americans, and they're displacing lawful immigrants. And they're looking for unemployment benefits because their job went away because they were screwed over by their employer who hired these so-called asylum seekers. And they're not asylum seekers. They don't qualify. Let's be clear about asylum, and it's a sensitive issue for me, especially given my background. asylum is only supposed to be granted to an alien who has a credible fear of persecution based on race, religion, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or political belief, tribal affiliation, perhaps. Not because I come from a country of poverty or the water's not clean or we have a crime problem. Hell, if crime was the issue, how many Americans would qualify for asylum? Right? So it's a very specific sort of thing. And what does the 9/11 Commission warn us about? Well, the 9/11 Commission staff report said the following. This is page 98 under the title of Immigration Benefits. This is the 9/11 Commission staff report prepared by the federal attorneys and the federal agent assigned to that 9/11 commission. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, which is what DACA was or is, okay, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. So we call them asylum seekers, which gives them an aura of credibility to which they're not entitled. I jokingly wrote a while back that to call most of these people asylum seekers would be the equivalent of calling a homeless person an aspiring millionaire because he went out and bought a lottery ticket. Right? It's a joke. It's a sick joke. And nobody asks the one question that should be asked of every politician who seeks to be elected to any office, and the question is, how are your policies in the best interest of the average American? That's what I want to know. How is it
And it's that one question that will tell us everything we need to know about whoever this political candidate may be.
Yep. I want you to sell me on the idea of a massive invasion by people whose identities can't be verified and tell me that this is a good thing. By the way, page 61 of that same report, exploring the link between human smugglers and terrorists in July 2001, the CIA warned of a possible link between human smugglers and terrorist groups, including Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Egyptian Islamic Jihad. Indeed, there's evidence to suggest that since 1999, human smugglers have facilitated the travel of terrorists associated with more than a dozen extremist groups, with their global reach and connection to fraudulent document vendors and corrupt government officials. Human smugglers clearly have the credentials necessary to aid terrorist travel. So now we have one other question that no one's asked, but I think we need to ask Joe Biden. Now, this is not an accusation. I want to be crystal clear, because we don't know where the chips are going to ultimately fall, but the image that's emerging as they turn on each little pixel on the screen, it keeps looking worser and worser, as they say. But if it's true that Joe got all these millions and millions of dollars and his family benefited from all these millions and millions of dollars, and by the way, as a federal agent, I couldn't take a cup of coffee or a glass of iced tea on duty. But let's say he's benefiting from it. What exactly did it buy? Could it be that our border is wide open because China is either extorting him or bribing him or made a deal with him to let in the fentanyl, which is killing record numbers of Americans, putting money in their pockets, putting money in the pockets of the cartels, putting money in Iranian coffers, Hezbollah working throughout Latin America with the human traffickers and the drug smugglers? Because I want to know, could it be that the money that we're talking about, if you follow the money, it will explain why the unthinkable is now being done to our country by our supposed commander-in-chief? And I want to know why no other person seeking to be commander-in-chief is describing it that way. Why aren't they calling this an invasion and saying, look, if you follow the trajectory that we're on, this is where it will take us? Why do they insist on limiting their discussions to the southern border? And then you have Governor Pritzker of Illinois, and I've mentioned this before, but I have to mention it again, is about to take aliens and give them police jobs. Let that sink in. And they've interviewed some sheriffs, and, you know, oh, well, it's unthinkable that an alien could arrest an American. Folks, that's the least of the problem. What people don't realize is that an off-duty law enforcement officer, cop, federal agent, whatever, has two things going for them that the average American doesn't. Number one, they can carry their firearms clean across the United States without limitation. Number two, the magazines in their firearms are not limited. So if you're a federal agent and you have a Glock with a 20-round magazine, you can take that magazine and that Glock and travel from California to New York and Florida and Nebraska and Oklahoma, and you are legally good to go. Now, these are people, they said, we're not going to avoid, we follow the federal law. No, they're not, because they said DACA aliens would be acceptable. DACA aliens were never lawfully admitted into the United States. They entered by evading the vetting process. They entered without inspection. So we don't know who they are. We don't know when they came here. We don't know who they're affiliated with. We're not even certain about their identities. And we have a problem with corruption in many governments of third world countries. Look at what's going on in Mexico. So you're going to take, let's say, a Mexican citizen or a Chinese citizen, and they have their police stations all over the United States to keep tabs on their citizens. I just wrote about a Chinese national who joined the military and became a New York City police officer once he naturalized. And then he got himself assigned as the public affairs officer in Queens Precinct for the Chinese community, where he was recruiting spies for China, using his authority as a cop. So we're going to make these people police officers. They don't even say a pledge of allegiance to our flag. They might be here illegally. We may not even know anything about their identities. They will have access to law enforcement databases and computers. By the way, under Cuomo, and I don't think it's changed, ICE agents can't access motor vehicle computers in New York State. I was authorized to do that. I went for training with the New York State Police. No more. You're an immigration agent. You have no right to know who's driving what car, even if you're going after a murderer, a terrorist, drug dealer. Too bad. Think about that. So we're going to give illegal aliens full police authority, firearms with unlimited magazines and the authority to carry them across the country, access to law enforcement databases, and the potential is there for corruption. So they will know when there's going to be a major field operation. You think maybe corruption could be a problem here? Imagine the cop that has to work with one of these characters whose life is on the line. And why aren't the Republicans jumping up and down and screaming about this on a daily basis? Because the same Pritzker also signed a law that severely limits who can carry firearms in Illinois and how many rounds can go in the magazine. That's because you're an American. If you're an illegal alien, like a DACA alien, who is never given lawful status, you know, when they say deferred action, the action that's deferred is their removal from our country, folks. That's what's deferred. People hear words and they don't stop to think what the words mean. Deferred action, the action deferred is their removal. They have to leave. So Pritzker said, if you're an American, we're going to limit your ability to get guns. We're going to have gun-free zones, and we're going to limit the number of rounds in your magazine. But if you're a DACA alien, all that goes poof, and you can carry any gun that any other cop can carry with as many rounds in the magazine, and you can travel across the country because that's federal law. And, of course, now we're going to support that federal law. So if you're living in Oklahoma, if you're living in Texas, if you're living in South Carolina, and you think, well, those idiots in Illinois, I don't live there, does it matter? Because that off-duty cop can hop into his car, drive into your city and stroll down Main Street with that gun on his or her hip and be entirely legal. How is this not an issue that should be screamed about at every opportunity by the Republicans if they're serious? See, I don't think they really want to win the election. I think this is all about gathering money and power and influence so they could be the quintessential lobbyists. And if Joe Biden stays in power, that's great, because they'll be able to use that as a fundraiser. oh, look who's in the White House. We better win control of the Congress in the next election. Send me money. Why in the world is no one referring to what's happening as an ongoing invasion that undermines public health, public safety, and most importantly, national security? How's that for an interesting question?
Well, it is a very interesting question, Mike, and I think you and I probably know a lot of the answers to that. It's,
yep.
They're all in on it. It's part of the plan.
They're all in on it.
It's a big club, and you and I ain't in it, buddy.
And what do you call an American who's killed by a dirtbag from another country? Collateral damage.
Yeah, a statistic.
A statistic.
Well, what was it Stalin said? One death is a tragedy. A million deaths are a statistic.
That's right. That's exactly right. So the fact that we've had hundreds of thousands of people killed by drugs, either directly or indirectly, most violent crime has a nexus to drugs. And it's funny, when there's a bad car accident, the first thing the reporter writes about is what? Oh, the driver was legally drunk. The driver was found to have cocaine. Yep. When there's a mass shooting, when was the last time you saw anything about that?
I don't think I have ever.
That's right. So we could add to the death count the people engaged in mass shootings. Right? We need gun control. Really? Did they ever talk about car control? Because roughly the same number of people die each year between car accidents versus drugs, versus guns. Guns, slightly bigger number by, I think, 2,000, at least last year. So what are we doing? What are we doing? We need gun control. Really? What we need is maybe politician control. You know, these talking about driving under the influence. Think about this. The politicians are governing under the influence. How's that?
It's pretty good. We've got about 20 minutes left. We've got about 20 minutes left, Mike, and there was something that you and I were talking about on the phone before we started the show. And
I want to bring you into this.
And the folks, I'm not exactly sure what's happened, but in the last year, suffered a couple of losses, and it may just be the natural inclination for guys my age to start dwelling a little bit more on things spiritual or about a real concern for my fellows. And I came across this article last week. Dennis Prager didn't write it, but he was commenting on it, and he made some excellent comments concerning it. But here's what's going on. And if we just stop and take a minute to think about all the crap that's happened in the last 4 years, let's say, it's easy to understand. But here's the deal. It has to do with suicide. Last year, about 49,500 people took their own lives in the United States. This is the highest number ever. It's the highest number definitely since the beginning of World War II, 80 years ago. The increases were seen in older adults. About a 7% jump in folks 45 to 64, more than 8% in people 65 and older. The younger folks, it only bumped up by about 1%. But this is a horrifying thing. And just for a minute, maybe you know someone who's taken their own life. That is a sense of hopelessness that I couldn't conceivably understand. And of course, you know, Mike, we were talking about this in the beginning. I said, these things kind of bother me. They really do. And what it says, what it speaks to in terms of the spiritual status, the spiritual health of man, I'm not talking religion. I'm talking spirituality. Right. I'm talking, I don't care, you know, if you're a Muslim, I don't care if you're a Hindu, I don't care if you're Sikh, it doesn't matter. I'm talking about this level of American spirituality that has degraded to the point that so many people are sick, they're tired, they're hopeless, they don't see any other way out. And that horrifies me. And Mike, I know you've been around a while, and these are things that I know, while we don't talk about them on the air so much, you and I have had a lot of discussions about the human condition in our private conversations, and I'm just curious as to what your take on all this is in terms of America's spiritual status.
Well, look, what's happened is loneliness has become more and more pervasive. In fact, the White House wants to convene whatever. How did we become lonely? Well, COVID lockdowns, walking through the street with masks on, which probably didn't serve much of any purpose, but it's hard to interact with people when you can't recognize them, right? Normally, you walk down the block, you see somebody, you say, hey, that's Charlie. Charlie, how are you? How's your daughter, right? That's fine. But you look at some guy wearing a hat and he's got a mask on. Who is it? You don't know. So rather than try to figure out who he is, we just ignore each other. We look the other way and we just pass each other like two ships in the night. And because of increasing levels of crime, people are afraid to step out of their apartments. So Amazon comes along and says, oh, we'll deliver your food. We'll deliver your new towels. We'll deliver your new TV, whatever. So you're not going to the stores because God knows you might get attacked at a store, right? You don't want to get in your car. You might get carjacked. So you stay home in your own little jail. The criminals are out there free. The law-abiding people are hunkered down in basically their jail cell. They don't interact with people. And the elderly, perhaps their kids have moved to some other cities. And, you know, you can do FaceTime. I know one of my kids lives out of town. We just did FaceTime yesterday. It's better than nothing, but it's not the same thing for sitting down, the same as sitting down for dinner. So between the COVID lockdowns, fear of crime, having stuff delivered so you don't have to even step outside your front door, that's not the way humans are supposed to live. We are supposed to be social creatures. Part of the problem, I think, that we have in society today is all the crap that goes on with social media, so-called. So you can be a hotshot and anonymously attack somebody, and you've had kids committing suicide because their self-image has been destroyed. And of course, questioning the sexual orientation of children must do wonders for their sense of self-worth. They can't even figure out whether they're male or female. All of this has been designed to take down America a brick at a time. The idea that parents are supposed to go to school board meetings. One of the things they liked when I was the PA president, people seemed to like my meetings, so we had the biggest turnouts, and I was very proud of it. And the principal wanted me to be the PA president, and the parents wanted me. And they said, boy, did you see how many people showed up last night? And I was happy because my goal as the PA president was parental involvement in their children's education and upbringing. You know, when I was a kid, I'm sure you remember this, there was a public service announcement that would come on saying something like, it's 8 p.m. Do you know where your children are?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right after the news.
You see it now?
No.
Because now they would say to you, it's none of your damn business. We got this. Right? They're doing everything they can. You know, there's two ways to kill an organism, to kill a country. You can certainly plant a bomb under the seat of somebody you want to knock off. Kaboom! He's reduced to smithereens, right? Or you can inject him with a virus that slowly kills off the cells in his body. And we've seen the Russians do that quite well with their poisons, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's a slow, painful death, which is what I think America is undergoing right now at the hands of the lunatic left that want nothing more than to destroy the United States. That's what I believe we're witnessing. And there's a sense of despair. And, you know, we normally have societal norms, societal checkpoints, so you know where you are. If you drive into a neighborhood you haven't been in for many years, maybe you used to live there and you moved out, and if they tear down all the old buildings, the old church is gone and the school is gone and that store is gone, and you have to start to look for what? If you don't have a GPS, you have to start to look for street signs because you have no idea where you are because you want to get to McDonald's, but you forgot how many blocks it is because it used to be next to the church, but there's no longer a church, right? They take down societal reference points and leave people lost, leave them completely baffled. So any sense of community is gone. I live in a community right now where half the people on my block don't even speak English. I grew up on this block. I've been here since I was 11. it's kind of hard to have a community when you say to somebody, good morning, and the guy looks at you and he goes, huh? Good morning, huh? Is that a community? No. And by flooding America with millions of people who can't even speak English, what does that do to a sense of community, a sense of belonging? It makes people feel, I think, ever more isolated and lonely. And isolation and lonely is a terrible thing. Why do you think solitary confinement does such damage to prisoners? Right? Think about that. What do you think of my assessment?
No, I think that's exactly right. We are. Humanity, human beings are social creatures. And when you divest them of that ability to socialize, and it doesn't matter what it is, whether you're walking your dog and you run into your neighbor, or you wave to the guy next door and motion him over for a hot dog and a beer, really doesn't matter. They don't want you doing that because, by God, we might just get along.
Yep, and we don't want that. We don't want that. So they want Americans to feel cut off, isolated, and hopeless. You destroy their morale. It's kind of like what Tokyo Rose did during the Second World War to try to demoralize the American soldiers. This is about the demoralization of Americans, aided and abetted by businesses, social media, the so-called news media. I don't know if I mentioned it on the program, but CBS News didn't even mention that this guy from Brazil that's wanted for murder here was from Brazil. All they talked about is the one murder and ignored the other murder that he's been convicted of back in his home country. Because it's about not only the crime of commission, but the crime of omission. We're not going to tell you. We're not going to let you know about this. We're going to keep you in the dark. In the government, we used to call it the mushroom treatment. Be kept in the dark and be fed a lot of fertilizer.
Yeah.
So how do you cope? How in the world do you cope when your neighborhood changes in a way where you don't recognize anybody, where you're afraid to go out because you might get mugged, where you're afraid to drive because you might get jacked, you're afraid to go to the stores because some looters may come in, and if you're caught up in that, they may decide they want what you have also while they're at it for good measure. So you are forced to retreat to your apartment. And I'll say it again, Americans are now being imprisoned and the prisoners are now being freed. That's my assessment.
And it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. And, you know, one of the things we talked about, too, the bombardment, the desensitizing bombardment when it comes to... Well, violence, for one thing, whether it's on TV or in the movies or in video games, doesn't matter where it's at. And I want to say,
but it devalues life and it devalues the dignity of life. Wholesale slaughter of people is not something that's a good thing. And that's what a lot of this garbage promotes.
And it degrades, you know, they make all this noise about objectifying women and all that. These things, they degrade, they don't discriminate in who they degrade.
No.
These games, these movies, you know, they don't. It cheapens life all the way around.
Here's something I want to make a point. I want to just go off in a slightly different direction just for a moment. I want everybody, if they haven't seen it, to see Bridge of Spies. It's about how Francis Gary Powers, the U.S. spy pilot, was swapped for Rudolf Abel, the Russian spy. And Tom Hanks plays the lawyer Donovan, who argues the case before the Supreme Court for the Russian spy, talking about the need to provide the Russian spy with all of the protections of due process, because that's the way you combat tyranny and communism, because that demonstrates who we are. And I agree with that, by the way. So when you see what's happening with Trump, when you see what's happening with January 6th, and I want to be real clear, there's nothing about January 6th that I support. It was terrible. It was heinous. It was stupid. But the FBI is still out there on a witch hunt, even arresting people who might not have been there, but who might have spoken to somebody who went there. They're supposed to be going after the terrorists. Instead, they're casting a broad net to go after our fellow Americans, stretching their resources that are already limited, thin beyond belief, further endangering us. But meanwhile, how many people went to jail for the riots at the White House that injured all those Secret Service agents and the fire that was set at the church and all the other damage around the country? When you have selective enforcement of law, see, that's why Lady Justice is supposed to wear a blindfold. When you have selective enforcement, the protectors, law enforcement, become the persecutors. Because then it's not a matter of saying, well, I did everything right, I don't have to worry. No, no. If you're affiliated with the wrong group, they will find a crime to hang on you by hook or by crook, literally. And that's what happens in third world countries, communist totalitarian countries, and fascist regimes. And that's what upsets me, because that's what I believe we're seeing, the use of law enforcement as a political tool.
Oh, exactly.
I mean, we're being attacked from every possible direction, whether it's the society, whether it's the family, whether it's the education system, whether it's law enforcement. This is a top-to-bottom shakeup to destroy America. And who's waiting in the wings, folks? Well, you have communist China that runs concentration camps. You have Iran, you have North Korea, and you have Russia. Wow, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, just communism had, you know, communism's only killed about 100 million people. Let's give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what you were talking about earlier, Berea said, show me the man and I'll show you the crime. They'll find, and they have tried desperately, to do something with Donald Trump. And it's a shame that being a horse's ass isn't against the law, because then they'd have something on it.
Yes, I agree. But, no, you're right. I mean, sometimes his mouth is his own worst enemy. But my goodness gracious, you look at what Biden stands accused of, Hillary destroying her phones and the bleach bit. And all. I mean, either you're going to go after someone for that or not. I remember a time when blacks would complain, well, I was pulled over for driving while black. And if, in fact, that was what was happening, it's despicable and it's wrong. I made lots of arrests and I put on blinders. I didn't give a damn if you were red, green, purple, or had stripes. It was about the law, whether you violated it. So if you think that's terrible, and it is, no question, then they should be equally alarmed when, instead of skin color, political orientation is the defining issue. Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
In my view, I'm not a conservative. But by the way, they're not liberals. Don't call these people liberals.
No.
Liberals celebrate the First Amendment. They want to destroy the First Amendment.
These are cultural Marxists. That's all that is. That's
just
communism, nothing more.
Yep.
Well, we got about 5 minutes here left, Mike. Once again, obviously, you know, anytime I get to talk to you, it's a real treat. And anytime we get to talk and share this with my listeners, it is just gravy. It's even better. You're still doing a show on Friday nights. We've got the Michael Cutler Hour, right?
I am the Michael Cutler Hour, Blog Talk Radio. I owe Front Page a couple of articles. I've been so tied up with stuff. I haven't written it a bit, but I am working on some articles now. You know, the Jewish New Year will be coming up in a couple of weeks. I don't care what your religion is or how you measure the year. I hope that for you and everybody out there, that this coming year brings everybody health, happiness, and peace. Boy, peace is so important. But understand, on the anniversary of 9/11, we must not forget it. I know kids that know more about Pearl Harbor than 9/11, and Pearl Harbor happened long before they were born. And we have a generation of Americans now who just became adults who were also born after the terror attacks. And it's by design, I believe, that these kids are not being taught about the threats posed by ideologies that are the antithesis of what America stands for. And that's important to remember. It's naive to think otherwise. You're not stupid or foolish if you lock your door at night. You're just being abundantly cautious and prudent. That's all that we need to do. And if we sit down with our neighbors and we have conversations, whether it's over a football game or a barbecue as the weather gets a little bit cooler, Have the conversation, not about personalities, because they all suck. Talk about the issues. Talk about the trajectory that they've placed America on. Talk about what this will ultimately mean for our children, our grandchildren, our nieces, our nephews. This is a very dangerous era. We truly stand at crossroads. But we got into this mess in large measure because far too many Americans became lazy and said, oh, that's not my problem. I would rather go on a picnic, right? I remember one day I had asked the guy from the dealership where I was getting my car serviced if he'd, you know, paid attention to a debate or something. Or he said, oh, I didn't have time. I said, oh, okay. I said, by the way, did you get to see the basketball game last night? He goes, oh, that was unbelievable. Did you see the second half?
Yeah.
I said, wait a minute. You got to see the basketball game, but you didn't have the time to do what? Do you have children? What kind of a father are you between you and me? And he got very embarrassed. He said, I see your point. I said, we have got to do this, if not for ourselves and for the next generation of Americans, including our own children. That's what I believe. And I think that if we approach that discussion with our neighbors and friends and coworkers that way, I really think this is doable. You know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg said that the mascot of the United States should not be the bald eagle, but a pendulum. And by the way, I don't know if you know this, but I saw an article a couple days ago. In Mexico, there have been riots, because they're furious that they're trying to pull the same crap on them about gender and all this other nonsense in the schools, and they are calling it out for what it is, communism. And they said, we don't want communism in Mexico, and there were major riots in a Mexican city over this.
Wow.
So perhaps that pendulum is starting to move, and it's not just America. This is a global effort. This is a global effort, and
we
need to stand up against it. Yeah, but that was encouraging to see that happen in Mexico. They absolutely
called
them out.
Well, you know, that's a communist, and
we don't want you.
But I believe Mexico fundamentally is a very conservative country based on its people.
Yes. Yes,
you
they
know,
are.
Good,
and they
hardworking,
absolutely are.
Catholic people, and I think that yeah, and that and we're seeing and we're starting to see that here in black communities as well when they try to do this stuff. They reject it.
Well, even by the way, even a Muslim community is saying, what do you mean this
guy is
a boy and not a girl?
Yeah, Hamtramck with the city council
did
away with all that stuff. They held a vote and did away with the pride flag and all that stuff on government property.
I'm telling you, that pendulum is going to swing, and it's going to hit somebody in the backside, and the sooner the better, as far as I'm concerned, should that happen. Don't let the door hit you on the butt on the way out.
And if it did, you know what? We can get another damn door.
Exactly.
I can go to Lowe's, and we can get another door. We can hang another door if it does.
You betcha.
Michael, once again, thank you so much for being with us. We've got the show on Friday nights. Are you going to be appearing anywhere in the next week
or so that we need to know about? No, occasionally Newsmax surprises me. They just had me on a couple days ago, which is always good. I'm kind of quieting down a little bit. But look, we all have to pull together. Knowledge is power. And the most important thing that we need to do is celebrate the First Amendment. Have those conversations, folks. I'm serious. You'd be amazed. And end the conversation with a question. Okay? A simple question. I used it on TV. It was very effective. Would you get on an airplane if you saw people sneak past TSA? Oh, my God, no. Then why are we being forced to live among millions who've done the same thing here and they have no right to be here? That simple question will stay with that person forever, and it'll pop up at the oddest times when they're taking a shower, walking the dog, driving to work. Questions are incredible in terms of being thought-provoking.
Oh, well said indeed, my friend. Once again, another magnificent conversation between me and my friend Michael in the books and on its way to the Broadcast Museum of Long-Winded Middle-Aged Guys.
You betcha. James, thank you as always for having me. It's always a privilege.
All right. I'll be talking to you soon. Be well, my friend, and I can't wait to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Take care. So long, everybody. Have a great evening. Bye. Be well.
What a terrific guy. What an absolutely terrific guy. That's all the time we got. We're down to 10 seconds. You guys take good care of yourself. We'll be back next week, invariably, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. Take care of yourselves.